Okay, so we're back. We are back from our self-imposed vacation, which you didn't notice because we kept doing episodes. But it is that we are actually recording this on the day that you are hearing this. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. My name is Sam. With me today is Becky. How are you?
I am great, Sam.
And also with us is Dustin from Atheist Nomads. How you doing?
Doing good. Glad to be here.
Fantastic. Yeah, so we've had your partner Wes on quite a bit because he's local and also likes doing this whole radio business. But we've been trying to get you on the show for, geez, how long now?
A couple years. It's just I live, 500 miles away.
Yeah.
Where do you live, Dustin?
Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, so like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I have much to apologize for, friends. I said I don't know any atheists in Idaho. There is no sense in which I was correct in that statement. And we got a lot of really cool emails. I guess a lot of people what was kind of nice is somebody said, well, there's a lot of atheists out here, you just don't know them, which I assumed, even though I was wrong. But they said I was kind of nice about Idaho, because it's kind of a cool-looking place. I like being out there.
Well, the statements you made were all very fair.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Something about how she was just some random crazy person. And
oh, yeah. And that's, was it that, the story I got yelled at in a different way as well?
Yes, it was. We brought up Idaho because there was a woman who, through some religious zealotry, or religiously zealotous utterances, had also viciously attacked a neighbor and tried to convert her, to whatever brand of Christianity she was advocating. This was a sort of religious occurrence that happened in Idaho, and we imagined,
Christian on Jew violence.
Yes, yeah. A Jewish neighbor.
And also getting some emails from, I guess, mental health professionals. If I gave the sense that I was making a diagnosis about this person, I wasn't. I'm a yutz on the radio. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist or anything like it.
And the last I heard, her trial was being held off because they needed to do a mental health assessment on her.
Yeah. It's a strange thing. We also have some other people to thank because we couldn't thank them before. We'd like to thank Borrow Mac Shop from Unionville, Tennessee, Southern Virginia Atheists from Roanoke, Virginia, Richard from Actual Kent in the UK, Rick from Elma, Gordon from San Francisco, California, and Candace from Bremerton, Washington for meeting Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is Peggy from Kent's challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards keeping the lights on and show production. If you would like to contribute, you can go to the AskAnAtheist.tv website, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, and it'll take you right there. And so thank you guys very much. Yeah, so Idaho. I like it out there. I like traveling, and we drove on our sojourn across the country where we got stuck in...
We got stuck in one of the Dakotas.
South Dakota.
Yes.
Near Presho. But then on the way back, we stayed in Coeur d'Alene. It was really nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, it is a very beautiful area up there.
Yeah.
And, Idaho does have a lot of atheists. It's just you get the two kinds. There's people that I know in the Treasure Valley Coalition of Reason that are, and our member organizations that are happy and they're finding community. And then there are the ones who live in the rest of the state that are terrified and keep very, very quiet.
I can imagine that. We had Libby on the show, who's from that area, and the way she would talk about Idaho was a little different than the way it's been described to me in email recently, but yeah. She grew up Mormon, so I imagine her view into it was a little different.
Mm-hmm. And also, that part of Idaho, most likely I would assume she was in eastern Idaho. It is very, very Mormon over there.
Okay.
Effectively North Utah.
Fair enough. Speaking of Idaho, I guess it's all about Idaho in our first segment. The Idaho House of Representatives voted 44-25 to tell Congress to impeach any federal judge who rules in favor of same-sex marriage. The resolution faced bipartisan opposition, with 11 Republicans joining Democrats against the bill. Ken Andrus, a supporter of the bill, said that the small group of judges were ignoring the will of the people. John McCrosty, a gay Democrat from Boise, called the bill hurtful, saying that the bill implies his marriage is worth less than anyone else's. For the record, I don't know how to pronounce Boise, and I'm not even going to try.
You pronounce it correctly.
Oh, I do. Okay.
yes, congratulations.
Thanks. what is it with governments these days and trying to tell other parts of the government how to do their jobs, like in an official capacity? Not like I'm going to go on the news and say the president, everything the president does is dumb, or everything that the House does is dumb, but they seem to want to do it officially now.
Yeah. Yeah, like the senators that recently signed on to an open letter saying that the president was wrong and they weren't going to do what he wanted with Iran.
Yeah.
It's not their role. It's not the role of the Idaho House of Representatives to tell Congress how to act.
Wait, that's not what we were talking about when we learned about checks and balances in sixth grade?
But the Idaho House of Representatives, with their three-month session, have so many things they can't waste time on, like protecting the LGBT community, protecting children from medical neglect. Yeah. They do have time to try to tell Congress how to do their job.
Well, hey, you know, got to keep it interesting. It just reminds me of when I was really young and I was not actually going to, but spending a lot of time at Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois. They had on their internal TV service this channel called Scola, which spent a lot of time talking about like government and politics in other parts of the world, partly for education, partly so that people who were from those countries could see what was up. And there was a big section about the Japanese diet. And I couldn't follow a thing that was going on. It was all in Japanese, don't speak Japanese, until the point where one of the legislators got up, walked up to the dais, and punched that guy in the face, the guy who was talking. Just let it go. And I'm like, I have no idea what was going on, but this is instantly more interesting. This is instantly more interesting than most politics at the time, which was the late 90s.
Is this how you fancy Idaho legislator working?
No, I wish they'd do this, because at least it would be more honest.
Well, what they did do recently, a Hindu gave the invocation before one of the houses of the legislature, I believe it was the state senate.
Yeah.
And one of them posted on Facebook the day before that he was going to do everything he could to keep that from happening, that it needed to be Christian prayers for the invocation. Yeah. And so when this Hindu got up, three senators walked out of the room.
Well, that's crappy. Don't get me wrong. But I remember in 2004 or 2005, like early in the century, if you will, they did that at Washington, D.C. And like staffers and stuff invaded the audience area and would just repeat stuff in monotone. Like they're trying to do their convocation and then there's some weirdo Christian up there going, Jesus is Lord. Bzert, bzert. 20 wow. Go to 10. Jesus is Lord. 20 go to 10.
So I imagine merely standing and turning your back or walking out is a sign of protest. That is a silent but highly visible protest. And I actually would say, all right, now we can fully identify your personal bias against this.
Yes.
But at least you're not being horribly interruptive and derogatory during someone's presentation.
One thing I was proud to see was their actions were condemned by the House, or excuse me, the Senate leadership, by the media, and everybody was thanking the person who gave the Hindu invocation.
So I've heard of this happening before. I've not heard of actual condemnation from a party leadership before. That's interesting.
Yeah.
We did hear when in Arizona, at least, when Representative Mendez gave a humanist invocation and another, congressman, state-level congressman, said we need a do-over in the next day to have a real prayer. Then one of the representatives from Navajo County actually said, no, we have a plurality of beliefs and faiths in our state. And someone who was from the Navajo Nation, you know, said, hey, lay off. Mm-hmm. So at least there's that. So back to this thing about marriage equality, someone saying, hey, you know, the small group of judges ignoring the will of the people. The will of the people is diverse. And the will of the people should not, the religious will of the people certainly should not influence how other people get to live their lives.
And the judiciary is there explicitly to protect the minority from the tyranny of the majority.
And that's the thing I love about this. With all the conversations we've been having on things like posting signs in county buildings, and everybody's like, well, this is what the majority wants, and this needs, and they're ignoring the will of the people. And it's like, well, I've read these documents, like the Declaration of Independence, which you guys love to quote, and the Constitution and the United States Code, and they all seem to suggest that human rights does not require the assent of the people. Is what it comes down to is when you talk like that, when people talk like that, the idea is, if I get the majority, like if atheists get the majority and I become the bad guy and I go to Congress and I make Christianity illegal, you're supposed to go along with that? That's supposed to be okay? Now I realize Christians have this weird apocalyptic idea that if I ever do that, that means let the nukes go because the world's going to end. They've got their own little supernatural catch for everything for anything that could possibly happen, because then they can just pretend that the world's going to end and do an all-out war.
And we're talking specifically about the dispensationalists here.
I will even go beyond the dispensationalists. I think it's a much larger population than that.
Okay.
For thinking that would be something that's saying that Jesus is returning.
Yeah.
That's pretty much every Christian. The ones who would want to let the nukes fly, that's a much smaller group.
It is. Well,
a subset of the larger group.
I think
group.
You have a group of people who believe that an atheist, a government that hates Christianity, signals the end of the world. A smaller group who believes that the nukes will fly when that happens and they should mm-hmm. participate. And then an even smaller group who's salivating over that moment.
Yeah, where's your small group that is okay with religious pluralism here?
I think most people, to be honest with you. But we're not talking to those folks.
Right.
You know, I mean...
There we go.
I don't even... politics! They're out in the toilet. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we are going to interview Richard Young from Humanist Perspectives about their Get Out of Religion Free card that they were passing out up in Ontario.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Richard Young works with the Canadian magazine Humanist Perspectives. He joins us today to talk about a unique project to reach out to teens in Ontario who don't wish to take religious classes at their state-subsidized high schools. How are you doing today, Richard?
Very well, thank you.
All right, fantastic. Now, there's a lot of background here that was absolutely new to me when we read this story. Can you fill us in a little bit?
Sure. I think, to your listeners, I think they'd be shocked to find out that Canada isn't the bastion of secularism that most people think it is. Canada has a fully publicly funded Catholic school system, at least in the province of Ontario. So there's a publicly funded public school system, and there's a publicly funded Catholic school system. So it's really weird.
Beyond that, there's even basically, instead of just two, there's four systems, because Ontario is both French dominant and English dominant?
Pretty much, yeah. Canada has two official languages, French and English, and it's got to do with, of course, the history. And I guess the school system thing kind of grew out of that, where back in the 1800s, before Confederation, there was what was called Lower Canada and Upper Canada. Upper Canada was Ontario, turned into Ontario, and Lower Canada turned into Quebec. And one of the deals of Confederation was to protect minority religion schooling rights. There was a guarantee that there would always be a publicly funded Protestant school system in majority Catholic Quebec, and that there would be a publicly funded Catholic school system in Ontario, in Protestant Ontario. And here we are 150 years later, and that's just, you know, the minority religion is absolutely not Catholicism in Ontario. That's the majority religion. You know, Toronto is probably the most cosmopolitan city on earth. Well, at least 100 religions are represented in the province, and Catholicism is the majority religion. So what started off as a minority religion right has turned into a majority religion privilege.
And kids now all have to take Catholic courses, basically, like catechism. It's not just like a comparative religions class.
So yeah, there's four publicly funded school systems in Ontario: French public and English public and French Catholic and French public. So two languages and a public and a Catholic school system. So four systems. And if you are in the Catholic school system, which is 100% publicly funded, a student would be told that every year they have to take a mandatory Catholicism course. And these schools have chaplains, which are publicly paid. And there are masses that happen, depending on the school. It could be weekly, it could be monthly. And there's all sorts of Catholic ritual and Catholic indoctrination that takes place in these schools. And they're publicly funded, which brings us to the coupon, where, yeah, where we'd like to try to let students know that legally, a part of the deal behind having public funds going to Catholic high schools, a part of that deal was that any student who wishes to not participate in this allegedly mandatory religion course doesn't have to take it. They can take another course. And I can read the actual relevant section of the Ontario Education Act, section 4213, and it states, "No person who attends a secondary school operated by a Roman Catholic board shall be required to take part in any program or course of study in religious education on written application to the board of the parent or guardian of the person."
So that's any student. That's not just, hey, the atheist or Muslim or Buddhist or Jewish kid that happens to attend that school. That's any student, even the Catholic ones, that can opt out of that Catholicism course?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's not a comparative religion course. It's maybe in some schools it's something like that, but it is there absolutely for indoctrination purposes.
I kind of wonder how this is communicated to the students, because I suspect that if the administrators or the teachers came in and said, you must take this class, it's an absolute requirement, and put it that baldly, that this would be pretty much a cut and dried case. But I'm sensing that there might be some type of coercion. Is that actually the case?
Well, the fact that almost zero students in the province know that they can be exempted from the course, and the fact that there have been lawsuits regarding this, tells me that schools are absolutely not advertising the fact that there's an exemption,
right?
That a student is legally available to take. And whenever a student does, or a parent happens to find out that there is this thing in the Education Act, where if a parent would rather their child take a course, you know, another science course, because they want to get into an engineering school after high school, or another whatever course, that they can absolutely choose to take a course other than this religion course. And so, you know, 4 credits across 4 years, that's a big deal. That's a big commitment.
These catechism classes, I'm assuming, don't show up on their transcripts by accident. I wonder how it gets into the heads of these students, because, you know, like you said, nearly zero of these students know that they can skip these classes, but they seem to be taking these classes. And I kind of wonder how the administrators of these publicly funded Catholic schools make it seem like these classes must be taken.
Yeah, well, it's just stated, even on these schools and school board websites, they give the solid impression that if you want to attend these schools, then these are the hoops you have to jump through. It's a Catholic school, so it's expected that you participate in the masses, and that this course must be taken. And that's just absolutely incorrect. Anyone is allowed to attend these publicly funded schools because they're publicly funded. So that's sort of one way of keeping, I guess, I mean, undesirables out of a Catholic school. It's a dirty trick.
I was thinking about, you know, that you mentioned Toronto, hugely cosmopolitan, but there's areas in Canada that are quite rural, as there are in the States. I'm trying to think, you know, you say, oh, if I don't want to do that, I could just opt out of all that pressure and coercion anyway and just attend the publicly funded public school. But I imagine that there might be places where the only available school in a very rural area is the Catholic one. Is that the case?
Yeah, that is absolutely right. I'm very perceptive of you, of course. Yeah, that's really good. Like in some rural communities, including in Alberta, this has been going on. It just so happens that a small community can just support one elementary school and one high school. And in some cases, it's a Catholic school. And you either attend this school and, you know, bite the bullet and pinch your nose and go through all that kind of Catholic ritual stuff, or you put your child on a bus for, you know, an hour or 2 hours every single day. So it's sort of obscene. And if these were not fully publicly funded, well, we wouldn't be having this discussion.
I'm wondering what kind of things young people might face if they do exercise their right to opt out of the religion classes. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, you can imagine the kinds of peer pressures. It's very tough for a kid to make a stand on something like this. I think most people would just say, well, this is the nearest school, I'll go to this school. And if, you know, I'd rather go to the occasional mass than sit on a bus for an hour a day, that sort of thing. So there have also been situations where a student has wanted to form a gay straight alliance club in these publicly funded Catholic schools. And they have been told in no uncertain terms that that's just a no-go. Whereas in a public school, every high school that I'm aware of has some sort of a gay straight alliance club. It would be obscene to deny a group of students the ability to form that kind of a safe space. But in the Catholic school system in Ontario, a couple of years ago, a trustee by the name of Alice Ann LeMay in a Catholic school board just outside of Toronto said, we don't have GSA clubs for the same reason we don't have Nazi clubs.
Oh, that went over well, I'm sure.
Yeah, and that caused quite a media storm back then, and it shone a rather bright spotlight on this unsavory situation, this sort of modern paradox. You have a publicly funded institution that is legally permitted to discriminate against gays and non-Catholics. It's just like, I've known about this for over 20 years now, and it's still a complete shock to me, and I feel like it is just unbelievable that this can be happening. And in Canada, of all places, like in the States, every now and then you find out about a gay student in Mississippi that's forbidden to bring their partner, boyfriend or girlfriend, to the prom. And that makes international headlines. Well, here we have an entire school system funded in the billions of dollars that's totally permitted to say no to a gay teacher or a non-Catholic teacher or a non-Catholic elementary school student. Like, the door can be slammed on your face legally. And I'm just amazed that more people don't know about this and there's not more of an outcry. There have been two United Nations human rights decisions on this where Canada has been asked to either fund every religion or fund no religions equally.
How does that go over?
Well, the federal government says education is up to the provinces, and Ontario says, well, it's a constitutional matter, so this is up to Ottawa, the federal government, to remedy. So everybody just, you know, points the finger at somebody else, and ultimately nothing happens. And the politicians aren't keen on it. It's considered political suicide to even bring this up.
Absolutely.
Because you're going to, you know, alienate the Catholic vote, and doing the right thing has little to do with any of this.
So we have this system, you know, of a Catholic public school system and a public school system. So it starts out good intentioned in a way where, you know, they're trying to prevent discrimination, trying mm-hmm. to allow for equal representation, you know, misguided at the start, I would think, but their heart was in the right place. But then over time, the population of Ontario changes.
Mm-hmm.
The minority becomes the majority. And now we've got this system that in place that basically allows the majority to promote and enforce sort of a religious privilege upon the population of people least able to defend themselves against it. I mean, that's basically what we're looking at here. And the legal defenses they've got, they're not being told about. So tell me about how Secular Ontario noticed this, or decided to take this one up, and that led to these really good ideas of this Get Out of Religion free coupon.
Yeah, so I work with this magazine, Humanist Perspectives. I'm the art director and occasionally the co-editor. And I just thought there has to be a way to have more people learn about, you know, this section of the Education Act, which allows any student to get an exemption from these religion courses and masses and whatever rituals. And so I thought it would be nice if there was like a get out of jail free coupon sort of thing. So I kind of...
We're talking like Monopoly?
Yeah.
The little community chess. Get out of jail free. I'm imagining our little capitalist fleeing right now and the little orange card, right?
That is exactly what it is. That's like a small part of this colorful coupon. A group of Secular Ontario members thought this was a neat idea and had 10,000 of these printed. And they and I and others around the province have been trying to make sure that these get into the hands of Catholic high school students. It's gotten the attention of some media. And I guess the idea is the more people that know about this, the more people that will clamor for their exemption, and the more squirming the Catholic boards will be doing, and the more lawsuits will happen, and the more people will find out about this. And it's one of those things where the more people who find out about, you know, this sort of medieval, archaic thing that's going on in, you know, ostensibly secular Canada, the more outrage there will be. And ultimately, we might have a government that has the courage to either put this to a referendum or just, you know, by the stroke of a pen, amend the Constitution in a way that levels the playing field for all religions.
It's definitely going to be interesting to follow that and see. Now, some of our school districts in the States have wrestled with issues of public access to school kids via book or pamphlet handouts. We have, you know, Gideons coming in to distribute Bibles. Sometimes there's been a response with free thought movements to try and have a passive distribution. Are there any Canadian laws governing political activism near schools? What did this sort of handout of the coupon sort of look like?
Well, it wasn't like a guerrilla tactic where a bunch of us just like invaded a school and banged down classroom doors and threw these leaflets out there. Or it was nothing like that. It was just some groups of people on sidewalks before school started or at the end of the day, just handing them out like any other, you know, public sidewalk sort of coupon distribution thing. That's all.
I can imagine that the guerrilla tactics might have garnered a little bit more media attention, but not the kind that's probably desired. So,
yeah.
So it's interesting to hear about it. And, you know, have you or Humanist Perspectives magazine really gotten any pushback from either school officials or other media or parents or students for that matter?
Oh, absolutely no pushback from the students. I can't imagine any student getting ticked off about learning, you know, about their increased freedom. So at one school in Ottawa, the principal came out and had a chat with our coupon distributors, and it was fairly amicable. The principal let us know that Catholic schools have a right to exist. The coupon distributors let her know that it has nothing to do with the right of Catholic schools to exist, but it has everything to do with letting students know their rights.
That's usually how this ends up. I've heard this over and over again with, you know, stuff that I do with the interviews that I've done is, you know, any suggestion that we have rights to not participate in the majority religious privilege is always an attack on their right to exist. It plays straight yeah. into the persecution complexes that a lot of these groups have. So do you have any, have you had any reports of kids using these cards actually in the school context?
No, we're still waiting on that. I wish I could be a fly on the wall when a student presents one of these to their principal and says, I really don't want to take this course. And here's a note from my mom that requests that I be exempt. And then this sort of thing has happened before the coupon existed. I'm hoping the coupon makes it happen much more frequently. But whenever a student, whenever a parent finds out that this exemption exists and goes for it, the school and the board really goes out of its way to put up these artificial barriers. So, for example, some boards have pretended that this exemption is only available to non-Catholics. Well, that's nonsense, of course.
Right.
The Education Act says that no person who attends a secondary school operated by the Catholic board has to take these courses. It doesn't say no Catholic person who would. So that's one of the smokescreens that's put up. And they get pretty creative. They might say something like, And these are well documented. It's really shocking. I find it quite disturbing that they're able to kind of thumb their nose at the law and the government sits idly by because they don't want to alienate this imaginary block of Catholic voters. But anyway, so the other obstacle that's put up is on our property tax forms, you're supposed to tick off a public school supporter checkbox or a Catholic school supporter checkbox.
So you can actually decide where your property taxes go?
Well, this is precisely what doesn't happen. Once upon a time, maybe pre-1997, it did have something to do with directing property taxes here or there. And property taxes make up maybe 10 or 20% of the entire funding for the school systems. And so today, it doesn't do that. On the property tax forms, it says that you are to indicate your support, either public or Catholic. And it turns out that support has nothing to do with financial support anymore. And it's got to do with which set of trustees you can vote for. But it, to me, that's like the biggest stumbling block in getting the message out, because when folks see that property tax form with the checkboxes, it sure does look like you get to direct your property taxes either to the public system or the Catholic system.
So I want to get this straight. So 16 or 17 years ago, that you had a checkbox of, you know, of where do you want your property taxes to go? Do you want them to go to the Catholic public schools or the public schools? And then over time, that's shifted from actually having some control over where your money goes to basically a party affiliation?
Oh, it's not even a party affiliation. These days, your property taxes go into a big vat, and then they're doled out to any board on a per student basis.
Okay.
That's it. It has nothing to do with, there's no Catholic tax dollars, there's no public tax dollars. But before 1997, the education portion of your property taxes could be directed, yes.
In terms of trustees that you get to vote for, I imagine that would be akin to our school board elections in the States. So sort of directing,
yes.
Do you get to vote for the Catholic school board in your sort of district or the public school board? Is that
sort of what I'm understanding? Yeah, I had political primaries in my head when I was thinking about this. So
trustees, school board members.
Way more cogent.
I imagine, though, that kind of indicator would have a huge influence over elected officials if, just generic Catholic family said, I want to support the Catholic schools, then it would indicate to all the elected officials that there's generally a lot of investment, non-financial, but just personal and social investment in the Catholic system.
Yeah, Catholic boards definitely want people ticking off the Catholic checkbox. It's a way of flexing political muscle. Too bad it's not a way of, you know, funding. It's never gone to a vote. It's never, like, no politician has ever said, you know, vote for me and I will, you know, save us $1 billion a year and we'll have one publicly funded public school system for people of all religions. And so after 1985, Premier Bill Davis decided to extend public funding all the way up to grade 13. And his party was annihilated in the next election. And so the one time that it did kind of go to the electorate, they spoke loudly and clearly on that one. And the idea of extending public funding, and that cost the province an extra about $250 million. And that's every year.
Yeah.
One thing that does occur to me, though, is that this is a way essentially that a religion can institute de facto ethnic segregation, since I imagine that the ethnic makeup of Catholics would be far less diverse than the general public school population that would include all the different ethnicities, including the immigrant communities that, you know, Toronto, as you said, is so known for.
You can grab a yearbook and you can count on one hand how many visible minorities you'll find in the Catholic school. And in the public system, it's about 20 or 30 or 40%. And it's almost like a de facto racial segregation.
So I imagine if people would like to continue following this story, they can go to myexemption.com. If people would like to find out what you're up to and what the magazine Humanist Perspectives are up to, where would I send them?
Humanistperspectives.com.
Richard Young works with the Canadian magazine Humanist Perspectives, and he joined us today to talk about the Get Out of Religion Free cards in Ontario in order to fight the idea of catechism classes at publicly funded Catholic schools. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Sam and Rebecca.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we are going to continue talking about what's going on lately.
Hey, Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
Experience Mile High Humanism at the annual conference of the American Humanist Association, May 7th through 10th in Denver, Colorado. Network with chapter leaders, become a trained humanist celebrant, and hear from Lawrence Krauss, Marcy Hamilton, writers from The Onion, and more. Camp Quest is providing childcare, so bring the kids. High school and college students qualify for reduced registration fees. Go to conference.americanhumanist.org and register today.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And, wow, so we've decided to start a new segment.
A new segment connected to a segment connected to a segment. Three-line segments connected by three angles.
Yes. So every radio show that I've ever heard that tries to be funny will make a big deal out of Florida.
Oh, we're counting ourselves in that?
We have. Yeah, of course we have.
They're just comedic gold.
Right, yeah. They just do so much stuff. But because we're atheists and because it's not just Florida, we have noticed basically a never-ending fire hose of dumb stories from the governments of three particular states, and that would be Florida, Oklahoma, and one of my home states, Arizona.
Governments, citizens, people.
Mostly governments.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. So we have decided to call these three places. And if you will enter into this with us now, the obtuse triangle.
Obtuse. That's excellent. Excellent selection of words there. Operative
yes.
Word. Obtuse. Obtuse triangle.
Now, one interesting thing: if you draw out the triangle on the map, most of the rest of the obtuse stuff coming out of in the news is coming from that region.
Ah, okay. Yeah, so within the obtuse triangle itself.
Yeah, you get a lot of Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia.
You get some Texas. Okay.
Yeah. So we shall do that now. First off, Dateline Florida. Charges were dropped against a woman who vandalized the Satanic Temple's Christmas display at the Florida Capitol last year. Prosecutors dropped the charges against Susan Hemerick, a 54-year-old Tea Partier, citing lack of evidence that any damage was caused, despite there being both eyewitnesses and video evidence of the vandalism. Prosecutors also called out the display for being of poor quality, comparing it to a school science project.
This is an insult to school science projects everywhere. I have students that work very hard. They did their international baccalaureate poster presentations just recently in the cafeteria. School science projects rock.
What is it with politicians making kids feel bad? Last week, we had those New Hampshire guys who decided to completely tear apart some kids wanting a state raptor.
I know.
And this week, we have somebody saying school science projects look bad.
School science projects look like satanic Christmas displays.
Florida legislature, why do you hate children?
Why do you hate children and Satanists?
Yeah.
And if you go from the other angle, why do they hate art?
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Presumably. It's
no, art that doesn't have the Ten Commandments on it.
Yeah. It's true, only... True. Here's the thing. There's no damage that could be detected because you saw it as garbage to begin with, and it was garbage after she vandalized it. That way to be supportive of art, children, and religious diversity, Florida.
But we've also established, at least in Florida case law, that art is determined by materials used.
Okay.
Mm.
So if there's like this incredibly well-constructed religious display out of cardboard and paper, and I go and tear it up, I'm in the clear.
Yeah.
That's what this says.
Not that we are encouraging any vandalism of any artistic
not
display.
Not that you are encouraging any vandalism of any... No.
and also...
But that's the thing. If that's the standard, then it's not vandalism. It's not against the law. Is this really a path you want to walk down?
If its material is used, a Ten Commandments monument made out of granite... As long as the end result is still granite, it's still just a rock.
Okay. Still just cardboard.
Well done. Yeah, still just cardboard. We now walk up around the outside of the obtuse triangle to Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, how you break my heart.
A picture of a damaged power pole shaped like a cross is gaining attention after a tornado struck Oklahoma. A local teenager tweeted out a picture of the pole with the caption, "God is with us." The tornado killed one and injured at least 9 others.
Thank you, God, for killing a person and maiming 9?
God is... It's clearly the Old Testament God that's with him. God shows up, kills a bunch of people, moves on. That's kind of how it
works. But loves everybody else.
But loves everybody. Well, loves a very specific group of people.
Yes. Obviously, this one person that was killed and the ones that were injured had offended God some way.
Yeah.
So either God was not there and the tornado was able to kill and maim people, and then God dropped a suspended cross to remind people to thank God. I mean, it is slightly remarkable because the bottom of the telephone pole was just sort of shaved clear, and it is sort of suspended, sort of Spider-Man musical style, you know, by cords and cables, by the rest of the telephone wires,
yeah,
if you will.
God is with you because a telephone pole continues looking like a telephone pole.
Yeah.
Okay, cross-shaped object looks like cross?
Yeah. Surprise!
And it's amazing that crosses are highly effective for mounting and or hanging things.
Yeah.
Like
telephone wires?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Or a person.
Let's go with the wires. Let's go with
Ow,
the wires.
Well done, sir. So I've decided that I'm going to do one of those. I'm going to do an atheist religion because apparently that's the thing you do.
Do you have to be in the obtuse triangle to invent your own atheist religion?
No, but it's a thing that has happened in recent times, several times. I give you the flying spaghetti monster as one instance of that happening. But I've decided that my religious symbol is going to be a line. To show the progress of the arrow of time.
Okay, I like it. I like that.
So any time you see a line in nature, two points connected, whatever, that is just showing you the proof of my God and my religion.
Okay.
So every tree?
Every tree, yeah. Every strand of DNA. When your religious symbol is literally one of the simplest geometric things that happen, you're going to see it a lot. It's kind of... Now, is the fact that the cross is that simple to detect in noise, is that part of what gives rise to the seeing the face of Jesus in your toast or in the exhaust pipe of a dog?
We actually, our brains are, and most neurotypical brains are primed to see faces in things. That's why we also see faces in cars, you know, mm-hmm. nice little headlights and, you know, Beetles look really cute and buses look kind of angry and scary. Or, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's just me seeing faces in buses and cars and stuff like that.
Faces in particular, but patterns in general.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially recognizable patterns. If you recognize the pattern of a cross, you're going to see a cross every time something crosses something else.
Yeah.
But if we were primed, for instance, culturally to see circles as holy objects, then maybe we would be ultra, or three circles for that matter. Every time three circles would appear, we would see that as a sign of...
Yeah, we're not seeing the Olympic symbol in our SpaghettiOs.
No, it'd be five. You know, but three circles, you know. You get three apples that are growing all together in a little cluster, and you're like, hey, that's evidence of God's divinity in everything and nature and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Three stars that gather nearby each other.
Orion's belt.
Yep.
Yeah. It just, oh, and the whole floating cross thing, high tension power lines. That's kind of what they do. If you have, cause you have a row of these poles and they all help support each other. So if one gets cut down, it doesn't immediately fall. I mean, that's actually by design.
I'm thinking of the little toddler with one parent on each hand going one, two, three, whee!
Yeah,
and swinging like that, you know?
So rather than God showing that he loves everyone and is with them, it's really just engineering working the way it's supposed to work.
Engineering is with you.
The master engineer.
Where was this not in Moore, Oklahoma?
I believe it was in Moore, Oklahoma. Which
should sound familiar to listeners of the show.
Yes. So one of our regulars on the show, Becca Witzman, had her home destroyed in the, I believe it was the May 20th Moore, Oklahoma tornado.
Yeah.
So there was a series of tornadoes and a March that, you know, are starting up again. It's Tornado Alley. It's tornado season. And we do wish all of the residents of Moore, Oklahoma, despite their residing in the obtuse triangle, we wish them the best because we don't wish that tornadoes destroy things.
The reason I like calling it the obtuse triangle is sort of, it's like a less wooey Bermuda Triangle. Just because you're within the Bermuda Triangle doesn't make you some sort of space entity. Similarly, being within the obtuse triangle doesn't mean you are obtuse. It just means obtuseness happens around you. Not like it doesn't happen here, but work with me. It's a segment title.
But it's far more acute when it happens in Washington State.
Let's go to Arizona. Woo! Arizona State Senator Sylvia Allen suggested that the church should be mandatory in the state. Allen, a Republican from Snowflake, brought up the point during a committee meeting discussing a concealed weapons permit bill. Wow, this is the most Arizona thing that ever Arizona'd Arizona. She claimed that there was a moral erosion in the soul of America and that we needed a moral rebirth. She then suggested that since religion is declining, the committee should be debating a bill that would require everyone to go to church of their choosing on Sundays. Allen then admitted that such a bill would not be allowed.
So she's not actually floating a real bill saying everyone should go to church. She's kind of musing her wishes. I'm thinking, you know, grandma being like, oh, kids these days, I wish they wouldn't play video games so much. You know, that's sort of what I'm envisioning here. But this is Snowflake, Arizona. Snowflake, home of the stance, the government stance, the local stance that global warming is a hoax.
Yeah.
Because of why, Sam?
Because of the flood. Yeah,
because of flood. Because God promised Noah that he would never destroy the earth with flood, so therefore sea levels can't actually be rising.
Well, you have some familiarity with this, don't you?
Yes, I do. When I was a believer, and for the record, my background was Seventh-day Adventist. Adventists would be in violation of this law if she were to be able to get it on the books, because they go to church on Saturday, not Sunday.
Well, Jews don't go to church at all, generally.
Yeah. But as a believer, I believed that, you know, God had said that, yeah, the world would not be destroyed by water again. So sea level rise wouldn't really be a big of a problem. And God did say that he would destroy the earth by fire. And so if the earth is warming, which I didn't believe it was. I thought it was just a liberal political conspiracy theory. That if it was happening, though, it was just getting ready for burning up the earth.
Yeah.
I see. How lovely and joyous your religious beliefs were.
Like I said, and anything that, I mean, it is kind of a, it maybe just be like a weird expression of coping mechanisms, perhaps, that anytime a bad thing happens, you've got a reason for it, just like... anytime a good thing happens, you have people who thank who aren't the people who made the good thing happen.
And when you have an epistemological framework that says that there are these things that are going to happen that you know are going to happen and they are bad, and you see things that look bad, then
you're going to link the two.
You're going to find however weak of a link, you will find it.
Yeah. And once again, because I briefly made fun of a place, I've been to Snowflake, it's fine. It's nice. But you got to admit, somebody being weird. Because this lady's been in the news before, you know, or at least this area has been in the news before because of weirdness. So to say somebody's being weird about U.S. politics from a place called Snowflake, I'm not going to pass that up. Are you kidding?
No. And it does snow in Arizona.
It does.
It is named Snowflake because there are occasionally snowflakes there.
It's not all the Sonoran Desert. There's also places like Flagstaff.
Yes.
Yeah. I really like Flagstaff. But I think everybody does. Just, you know, it's got a it's got a supportable population of like 50, and it's on the mountain.
It's fun. There's a college there. There's trains. There's, you know, cool, fun little culture things to do. Yeah, skiing. Yep.
Speaking of strange cultural things, Ken Ham has noted his objection to a proposed statue of Clarence Darrow that would be installed in front of the Rhea County Courthouse, home of the famed Scopes Monkey Trial. In a blog post on the Answers in Genesis website, Ham called the Darrow statue a secular symbol of evolution and agnosticism. Ham didn't seem to realize that the Darrow statue would go up next to an already existing statue of William Jennings Bryan, the religious opponent to Darrow during the famous trial. The American Humanist Association has offered to provide funding for the installation.
Yummy, I guess.
Yeah.
Statue going up. If there's already a statue honoring the person who was arguing from a point of not only losing the case, but also from a point of actual falsehood, then I think that it warrants a statue of the person who won the case through argumentation and who was on the side of actual truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to say, hey, I want to object to this person, not realizing that your actual hero, Ken Ham, is already there, enshrined in statue. A little bit of research, maybe.
Is he doing a Bill Donahue here, where he knows better, but he knows this will get him attention if he says this? And for the record, if that's true, I'm totally falling for it right now.
It's quite possible. On my show, I generally try to ignore stories like this in hopes that they are just trying to get attention.
Yeah.
Or just that they're not worth it. Right. There's more than enough news from actual government agencies and large organizations.
Oh, yeah, this episode's been chock full of it.
But stories like this are just so much fun.
They are fun. And I think it's part of the building. It's an expression of the culture we live in, that people are okay with people like Ken Ham going around saying that everything that scientists say is Satan, Satan, Satan. So I do feel like it needs to be talked about sometimes, but when it's this transparent, I just feel like that maybe we are being used here. But
and it very much does sound like he heard that the statue had been proposed, so he had to say something about it, so he got something out quick, and didn't even bother to take a look at where is this going and what else is there.
Absolutely. So, Dustin Williams of Atheist Nomads, why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast? Give you a chance to plug your
show. All right. We have been going for almost 3 years now. It's a weekly show. We alternate between doing news and interviews. And so every other episode, odd episodes are news, even episodes are interviews, or the other way around. Anyway, co-host is Wesley Benetti, which you've heard here on this show before. And you can check us out at atheistnomads.com. You can also look us up in iTunes or Stitcher.
Awesome. So before we wrap up the show, I do have a couple more announcements here in Seattle. Seattle Atheists will be hosting Rebecca Witzman at a Town Hall Seattle on Tuesday, May 26th at 7 p.m. to talk about the work being done by the Humanist Disaster Recovery Teams for Foundation Beyond Belief. We actually featured the Humanist Disaster Recovery Teams a couple weeks ago on the show. Also on June 4th at the Hall in Fauntleroy, Seattle Atheists will welcome Seth Andrew of the Thinking Atheist podcast. Doors open at 6, and there will be a reception before the talk, followed by a signing of his new book, Sacred Cows. Tickets for both events are available at Brown Paper Tickets, and more information will be available at seattleatheists.org and at their meetup. So it's been a while since I've talked to Seth Andrews, but I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, so two really good folks doing really interesting work, interesting thinkers, interesting workers. I will say the Humanist Disaster Recovery Teams, when Becca and I chatted about that, it was really quite enlightening, and it's really nice to see just a lot of different things that people who are non-religious can do. You can be a thinker, you can be a recovery worker, humanitarian, you can do it all.
And that's all the time we've got. Thank you very much, Dustin. Thank you very much, Richard. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Send us an email at questions@askanatheist.tv. We will see you guys next week.